Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bob Pompiani buying a little time right now as we get ready for Mike Tomlin's news conference that we carry live every week. Man, the Cleveland Browns, oh my God. Now, they did beat Green Bay, and they do have a good defense. It's a losable game, and they almost beat Minnesota. They should have probably beat Minnesota. So this is definitely a losable game, but it's the Cleveland Browns, and it's at home. It's not in Cleveland where the Steelers have lost lately. It can't shock anybody that the whole Joe Flacco experiment didn't work. They've been now through, this is their 41st quarterback. They've been through everybody. And their best solution to all of this going into the year 2025 was 90-year-old Joe Flacco. I realize circumstances, you know, helped to dictate that with injuries and the Deshaun Watson disaster.
All right, Joe, here we go.
And all hey, that. Here's the coach.
Certainly was a good bye week for us on a lot of fronts. First and foremost, from a health standpoint, feel really encouraged about the return of some people who've been out. Guys like Alex Highsmith and Joey Porter Jr., for example, worked yesterday on our bonus day, and the arrows pointed up on their participation. But we'll follow them throughout the week to make sure it continues to move in the appropriate direction. I think the same thing could be said for Jaylen Warren. Obviously, he missed the last game, but looked really good yesterday. And so excited about those guys. Two guys that we're watching very closely that certainly are going to be limited at the front part of the week, but may perk up and be included toward the latter part of the week is Calvin Austin with his shoulder and Jalen Ramsey with his hamstring. Both have been highly aggressive from a rehabilitation standpoint during the bye week, and so really encouraged about the potential of those guys, but we'll take it certainly day to day. The bye week is also an opportunity for us to sit back and take a look at some of the things that we've done schematically, adaptations we've made to circumstance, whether it's matchup related or player availability related, to look at the overall trajectory of our units, offensively, defensively, and special teams relative to our vision. Also to look around and look at some of the things that are trending in the game, how people are producing or preventing big plays, whether it's run or pass, the turnover game, gadget plays, etc., possession down play, fourth down appetites. We looked at a lot of things going on globally, and I think oftentimes you do that. But I think that's one of the advantages of maybe having an early bye, just to get a sample size of how the ball is being rolled out globally in 2025 at the early stages of it. And we did some of that. It was a good experience for us. But it's also really good to get back into the world of competition this week. We had a really good bonus day yesterday, putting an emphasis on physical conditioning and running and playing football that way as we get back and warm back up to it. And so excited about continuing that during the week. I'll talk briefly about Cleveland, some things going on with those guys. First on offense, obviously last week they went to Dillon Gabriel. This guy's a unique rookie. First of all, he's 25 years old, Hawaii native. He's a year older than Herbert, to put perspective on it. He's a six-year college player. He threw for over 18,000 yards in college, 155 touchdowns, 32 interceptions in terms of a TD to interception ratio. And so I think that in-helmet perspective, you can't put a price tag on. He also threw for 10,000-plus yards in high school. And so he is a rookie, new to the National Football League, but this guy's thrown the football around a lot. He's older and more experienced than most rookies. I think timely processing is his superpower, and I think his experience and that superpower has been on display. And I think those are one of the central reasons why they went to him. He's able to function and function with fluidity in an effort to minimize negativity when passing. They play a lot through their running back and their running game anyway. And so we got a big challenge dealing with him and dealing with them this week. I mentioned their running game. I can't say enough about what I'm seeing from Judkins. You know, this guy's played in four games. He started three. He had absolutely no training camp to speak of, and that really highlights what it is that we're looking at. Kudos to him and kudos to them for what he and they are able to produce. He's a tough runner. He's good inside. He's got good patience and pick and vision on interior running. He finishes off his runs with violence. He's underrated in terms of his ability to bounce it to the perimeter and pop long ones. He had a 60-yarder or so. They got called back in London last week that kind of highlights that. I've seen this guy a lot, obviously. We got a couple of his teammates from O State, and so I've seen a lot of his video, man. He is a complete back. He's the type of guy that can wear a defensive unit down. Certainly fits their mold. Is an awesome replacement, if you will, for Nick Chubb. And I think it's going to do nothing but get better with him and them. And when speaking about their run game, you know, certainly offensively, they got a lot of young people playing. I've mentioned Dylan and Judkins as rookies, but Isaiah Bond and Fanning are also rookies. So they have a lot of young guys at the eligibles. But what they don't have is inexperience up front. They're three interior people, Teller, Pausick, Betonio, man. They've been doing it a long time, man. I think Betonio's got 166 starts. The other guys have around 90 apiece in the National Football League. They probably got 50 or so together, that collective. And I think that interior group up front really sets the pace for them. Down in and down out from a protection standpoint and running the ball, I don't think enough is written and said about that collective and how critical that collective is to their offensive output and stability. Got a lot of respect for those guys, man. We got a full day's work ahead of us trying to minimize their run game with that runner and those three interior people up front. In the passing game, certainly, as I mentioned, Gabriel's superpower is his process and his timely processing. And I think that's on display in his utilization of tight ends. Njoku is a guy that we've been dealing with for a long time, really talented, really good after the catch, can turn screens and checkdowns into big gains. He's got a highlight reel full of plays of dragging defenders and things of that nature under those circumstances. And Fanning is an oversized athlete. I think you box him in when you view him as a tight end. There's been some of those athletes in recent years. I think Brock Bauer reflects that in Vegas, for example. He's probably the prototype of the young guys in that mold, if you will. I think that's one of the reasons why we were really excited about acquiring Jonnu, is because I think he fits into that category. Those guys are unique athletes. They got really good run after and athleticism. They're matchup problems for linebackers. They're oftentimes too big and strong for secondary people. And I see all of that in Fanning's play. Saw a lot of his Bowling Green tape. He's a talented guy. They're doing an awesome job of utilizing him. And on the outside, with Judy and Bond, man, they got some guys with big-time athleticism capable of producing big plays. They're doing an awesome job of taking care of the football. You know, they don't have anybody with ball security negligence in their group. Judkins was very good in terms of protecting the ball at O State. As I mentioned, Dylan Gabriel's been really good through his college experiences in terms of protecting the ball. And so we got to be ready to win possession downs. They do an awesome job of staying in manageable possession downs, third and short, and things of that nature. They play behind their run game in that way. And so, man, we got a real challenging game ahead of us from that perspective. On the other side of the ball, You know, they got great players. They got great schematics. They got an experienced coordinator in Jim Schwartz. I think, you know, they're probably one of the top defenses in football. Statistically, it doesn't matter how you describe it or shape it. They're good against the run. They're good against the pass. They're good in situations, sudden change, tight red zone, et cetera. Obviously, if you're starting up front, and that's what you do, it starts with Myles Garrett. He's a game wrecker. We're highly familiar with him. But everyone in the division is, yet and still. I think he had 2-plus sacks versus Baltimore, 2-plus sacks versus Cincinnati this year. And so we'll take our shot at working to minimize him. A component of that is staying out of one-dimensional passing circumstances. We better do a good job of that. Certainly we're going to deploy all the schematics that most people do, trying to minimize a guy like him. We'll use tight end body position. We'll use chip help. We'll slide the line that way. But everybody does. This guy has 100 or so career sacks with people doing that, yet and still he still gets home. That's why he is who he is. And so, you know, we have that to contend with. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the other guys. The rest of the guys are doing great, man. Mason, the draft pick out of Michigan, is a plug-and-play type. Is highly disruptive, and the rest of their group is as well. They do a nice job deploying schematics, man, as you work to do some of the things that people do to minimize Miles. The other three guys work in tandem. They have awesome three-man games versus four linemen and things of that nature that really wreak havoc on pass protection. They got a strong secondary led by Denzel Ward and Delpit. Those guys have been back there for a long time, man, and play smart. They do a great job of communicating. They're multiple, as I mentioned. Schwartz has been around a long time, man. That guy does a great job of working to play to their strengths and to cover up potential weaknesses that all units have. You see that in his schematics. He's thoughtfully aggressive. You feel game planning. He caters his plan week to week based on the things that opponents do. He's capable of going big and five defensive linemen versus run games and so forth that he respects. Saw a lot of that versus Baltimore. He's multiple in terms of dime packages and so forth against teams that throw the ball around a lot. Saw that a lot against Cincinnati, for example. And so we got a lot of work in front of us. We got a long week. We're highly familiar with those guys, but they're highly familiar with us. And I just think that's the fun and excitement of divisional play, that intimacy, those relationships. And certainly we have some new guys to us that need to establish themselves in the North, and they have some new guys that we need to familiarize ourselves with. And so looking forward to an action-packed game. And more importantly than that, we got a solid week of work in front of us in preparation. I'll pause and open it up for questions.
Mike, you mentioned at the beginning about just looking at what's going on around the league in terms of, you said, preventing big plays. What are you seeing in general? What are you seeing teams do against you in that regard?
Specifically us or globally?
But maybe you guys in particular.
You know, oftentimes big plays are self-inflicted wounds, and particularly some of the ones that we've given up. And it can occur from a myriad of things. Lack of cohesion due to newness or lack of player availability and losing some communication skills because of those things, or it could just be failure. But oftentimes, when you see highlight reels of big plays, oftentimes it's defensive negligence, and certainly at times that's been the case with us.
What are you seeing from the opponent in terms of defending you guys, trying to prevent big plays?
Oh, yeah, well, just identifying people that get down the field and utilizing schematics to minimize that, but that's nothing new. Everybody knows that DK Metcalf is a one-on-one challenge down the field, and so he doesn't get many one-on-one opportunities down the field. But that's, you know, we experienced that life with George Pickens as well. I think anytime you have somebody that's a down-the-field matchup issue, particularly when you competing against a coordinator as experienced and savvy as Jim Schwartz, they're going to minimize those things first and foremost. And so I think a lot of big play prevention first and foremost is identifying those that produce them and then deploying schematics that make the ball go elsewhere.
In terms of communication and cohesion defensively, what does having Deshaun Elliott back do to help that secondary?
Well, he's been here and he's been in the National Football League, and the position that he plays is a hub of communication. And so we're happy to have him back. But, you know, that's just a component of play. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention his playmaking as well. He's a good blitzer. Last week he had an interception and a sack fumble, and I think I'm more excited about having those tangible things back than some of the things that we're discussing.
Mike, does the play of Herb against Sawyer maybe shift the divisional labor a little bit, even if Alex is able to play this week?
That's something that we ponder once we see that Alex is available and to what degree he is in football shape. He's been out a number of weeks, and so there are a lot of variables to that discussion in terms of how we divide the labor up, and only time and a week's work will tell.
Mike, the Browns are allowing the fewest yards on the ground. They run a lot of one high ball and stack the box a lot. What do you guys have to do after having your best run game yet this season when you guys were in Ireland?
Well, we better block them, you know. We better run hard. We better finish off runs. We better have a finisher's attitude in terms of which direction the power falls. As you mentioned, they're elite in terms of run stopping. And so what does that mean? That means we got to be solid. We can't have unblocked people. But beyond that, we got to play well as a collective. We got to play physical, and we got to finish. And we got to understand that, you know, a successful day might be 3 and 4 yard runs at times. And we got to take what we can get sometimes from that regard.
How much of what you did and did well against Minnesota with the extra tight ends, heavier sets that you had is applicable moving forward, whether it's against Cleveland or anybody else, or was that just kind of a Minnesota specific thing?
No, we have a certain personality, particularly when we play 4-3 teams. I haven't been bashful about that. That's why we drafted Darnell Washington. You can't play 4-3 teams with 250-pound tight ends. You can't. They're weight classes in combat sport for a reason. And so when the edge people are 300 pounds, you better have somebody out there that looks like that animal. And so that was our intentions in Minnesota. And so certainly as we move into divisional play in the next couple of weeks and we're playing 2 4-3 teams, chances are you're going to see more of that. It's unfair at times to ask guys like Pat Freiermuth and Connor to block 4-3 ends. That's not real realistic if you want to have a real good run game day.
Mike, that's what I was just going to ask you. Would that help explain why Pat has played so few snaps, actually, through these first four games?
Well, I'm not talking about the totality of four games, but certainly last week, the matchup component has a lot to do with how we distribute snaps at that position. When you're looking at 4-3 units, as I mentioned, you better have some big people in that C and D gap area.
But we're still talking about tight ends. You mentioned Harold Fanning. We're seeing kind of a reinvention of the tight end at college, now trickling to the NFL. How much do you think that's still untapped at the league?
I don't know that it's new, to be quite honest with you. There have been a bunch of dynamic tight ends, it seems like, over the years in college ball, and it usually translates guys that display big-time run after, guys that are tough matchup problems for linebackers and oftentimes too athletic for DBs. In general, over the last 10 years or so, those are the tight ends that go in round one, those unique animals. And the good players generally go in like round three. And so that's just my perspective on it. I think the only reason he sat on the board as long as he did because he was a MAC player. But when matched up against Power 5 opponents, I think maybe it was Texas A&M or somebody I saw last year, he was not out of place by any stretch. He's a big-time player.
Mike, who do you look at it as options if Calvin can't go?
You know, it's not necessarily about pulling from people that aren't here. It's about the elevational roles of guys like Roman Wilson and Scotty Miller, for example. And so I'm excited about watching those guys work and maybe get some elevated participation. I think that's one of the beautiful things of the journey that is the season. You're going to get faced with some challenges as a collective. One man's misfortune is another man's opportunity. Case in point, Jaylen Warren wasn't able to go in Dublin, and I think a lot of people had an opportunity to appreciate Kenny Gainwell, something that we already appreciated, something that we've been watching day to day during the course of team development. And so hopefully a week from now, if Calvin is unavailable, we're saying the same things about some others.
Mike, Roman hasn't been utilized much, if at all, the first month or so. Is that more about the guys ahead of him than anything he may or may not be?
Or it might just be our selection of personnel groups. We've been talking a lot about multiple tight ends, Spencer Anderson reporting as eligible, the utilization of multiple tight end groups. And so his lack of participation might not mean anything relative to his performance or either what's going on at his position. It might just mean how we choose to deploy our personnel groups through the first month of the season. And so it's still very early in this process. We got 13 straight games ahead of us, so keep watching.
Mike, what kind of challenge is it, or is it even a challenge to kind of recapture some of the momentum that you guys had before the bye in Ireland and translate?
I'm not worried about momentum. I'm just worried about getting better. I think that's the spirit in which we should move. At the early stages of the year, it's about getting better week in and week out. Momentum is secondary.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of getting better week in, week out, I know you don't want to look at too far ahead, but do you take...
As we start to look ahead, go ahead.
preparation-wise this week, knowing you have two divisional games in 5 days over the course of the next 2 weeks, how do you kind of take that into consideration, preparation?
I'm just locked in on this week.
Starting on your own 35, which is one of the best in the league, and you guys are also converting a lot of red zone trips into touchdowns. What is the next step for you guys to get into the red zone more often?
Keep playing, keep getting better. You know, as I mentioned, it was like the momentum question. At this stage of the game, man, it's about getting better. It's about continuing to find rhythm in terms of how we divide the labor up, what schematics work for us, how we can function and function with efficiency in all three phases.
Mike, you talked about getting help for Myles Garrett, but what do you do from a coaching perspective with Broderick Jones? Maybe just sort of mentally, do you challenge him? How do you talk to a guy facing that matchup the first time?
I don't know that it requires conversation. I think Broderick is not a dummy. He realizes who he's competing against this week, and he's a competitor and a professional. And so I hadn't spent any time thinking about how I'm going to talk to or motivate Broderick this week.
Mike, you guys use a lot of tight end, so do the Browns. They run a lot of 12 personnel. How do you guys counter that with the way they use Njoku and the way they try to mix up their game? And does you guys using 12 personnel a lot help your defense in preparation?
I think oftentimes, you know, unit personalities are formulated through competition against your team. And so certainly we deploy a lot of multiple tight end personnel groups, and so we have experience defensively in terms of being diverse, in terms of some of the things that we can do to attack that personnel group. But I'm sure that they've seen a lot of it because, as you mentioned, they use a lot of tight end groups as well. Largely, though, I just think that general discussion falls more into the category that these divisional relationships are intimate. We know them. They know us. And so it's game on.
When you got Kenny Gainwell, was part of the thinking to get another back in here that had replicable skill sets to what Jalen provides so that in the case of injury, you guys can do a lot of the same things?
No, we just thought he was a good player that was kind of underutilized within the system that he was in because Saquon was just so talented. We played against him a year ago, and he made some critical plays against us in the running game, in the passing game. He covered kicks. I think he had 8 tackles last year for Philadelphia on kickoff. He returns kicks. And so we just looked at a player that had a versatile skill set in a lot of areas and that we thought was capable of more than what we were looking at on tape due to circumstance.
Mike, how different is it, or what challenges, I guess, does it maybe present to try to prepare for a rookie quarterback who maybe doesn't have a whole lot of film out there?
You know, I don't necessarily view it as a challenge. I just think we're faced with these type processes every week. Sometimes you have a large body of work to study. Sometimes you don't. particularly early stages of the season, you don't have a large body of work to look at anyway. And so we've kind of been in that mode through the month of September. And so it doesn't feel irregular to look at preseason snaps in an effort to gain a larger body of work in terms of getting a feel for his skill set. And so, you know, I imagine if it was later in the year, it would feel a little different. But we've been kind of in that mode. Everyone's been in that mode as you push through September. It's just not a lot of tape to look at relative to 2025 for anyone.
I know they just switched to Gabriel, but you mentioned a couple weeks ago last year maybe not wanting Flacco to get in the game. Is that something that's on your mind again this time around?
I mentioned that last year a few weeks ago specifically because of the dramatic difference between Flacco's skill set and Richardson's skill set. I don't know that they're doing things dramatically different in Cleveland, whether it's, you know, Dylan in there or Joe. And so it might be less significant this week than it was when I cited that example.
You talk about how much you played Spencer Anderson. It's one thing to say, hey, maybe six offensive linemen is a good idea. It's another to have six offensive linemen that you want to get in the game. What has he done to earn that opportunity not every sixth offensive lineman is someone the head coach wants to put out there?
You know, he's a capable guy. He's played some starting football for us in the past. He's a versatile athlete. I think he was a former high school tight end at one point in his life. If you give him a minute, he'll tell you about his AAU basketball resume. And so, you know, I don't want to make more out of it than what it is, to be quite honest with you. He's the man that's up in that regard.
Knowing that it is a small sample size, when you looked back at what you've seen from your offense through the first 4 weeks, what was your biggest takeaway in terms of areas you want to see them improve?
All areas, to be quite honest with you. You know, that's the nature of this thing, particularly when you have a young front, individually and collectively. You know, I just think the only way that you get better and gain experience is through playing. And so we've had some good moments. We've had some moments that aren't good. We got to keep pushing, and we better win along the way. That's my general mindset or tenor regarding the subject.
Mike, what did you see that you liked about Caleb Johnson, and was it important to him to have him kind of get back immersed in the offense against me?
I think that he's going to continue to get better with opportunity. You know, he doesn't have control over when those opportunities occur. And so when he gets them, he better make the best of them. I love the way that he's working during the course of the work week from a practice perspective. And so, as I mentioned, we got 13 straight games ahead of us. I'm sure he's going to get more opportunities to let his talent show and, more importantly, to develop talent and experience. He's a third-year junior. I don't view that as a negative. I love to be a part of people's growth and development. But at the same time, I don't get amnesia. I don't like that in the spring and then hate that in the fall. And so as a leader, man, I embrace the get-better component of his profile, and sometimes that's going to require work. Sometimes it's not always going to be pleasant moments, but that's what they pay me for.
Mike, what did you guys do better against the run against Minnesota? And with the way the Browns, they run into a lot of stack boxes, they're not afraid to run even teams low the line. What do you guys have to continue to do better against them?
You know, just the collective growth that I've been talking about a lot, but also you'd be remiss if you didn't talk about the presence of Deshaun Elliott. Being a major component. I thought his presence was significant in that game last week, being a down safety, a guy that plays in and around the line of scrimmage.
Mike, what have you learned about your secondary in the last few weeks because of the injuries? And with Joey coming back, does everybody kind of slide into those roles from game one?
You know, I mentioned early in team development that I liked our depth, particularly at the cornerback position. Well, certainly that depth has been tested. Talked a lot about B.E. and how excited we are to have him. He's done a nice job. James Pierre has done a nice job and playing more as well. It's good to have veteran backups, man, guys that have played in the National Football League and started some of that. And certainly those things have been tested. And to have a full complement of players is not something that I view as a problem. We'll go through the week. We'll keep pushing in terms of evaluating people's availability and levels of conditioning. And then we'll kind of divide the labor up appropriately so based on that information at the end of the week.
Eccles hadn't played a lot in the slot before you got him. Is that something you have always thought he would be able to do, or maybe you learned about him through the process?
He played some in New York in the slot. As a matter of fact, I think he played over 100 snaps or so inside for the Jets.
DK's had three really big home run after catch plays, two against New York and then the one in Ireland. And they're all three pretty astute moments of recognition from Aaron. We like motioned somebody away, lots of space on the deep end, and he took it 81 yards for a touchdown. How much can Aaron highlight that for DK, kind of in the moment at the line of scrimmage when he sees something available for him?
Boy, you're reaching there. You know, Aaron's an experienced quarterback, man. He makes good and timely decisions. When you get the ball to big people with top-end speed, that's what happens. Big when you do it on time. And his ability to operate on time creates run-after opportunities, not only for DK, but for everyone. And certainly DK has a skill set that's capable of producing the plays that you mentioned.
Anyone else?
What do you love most about the environment of a home AFC North game?
You know, I just love being in big-time competition. I'm a competition junkie. And I just think the divisional component of how our schedules are aligned these days in today's game, the intimacy specifically of the AFC North, the stability within the programs, man. You know, Kevin's been in Cleveland for a number of years. I've known Jim Schwartz for a long time. I think that intimacy, that knowledge creates competition. I think the geographic proximity creates a cool environment. There's a lot to be excited about relative to this game this weekend and AFC North football.
When you had to face a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who's so good at the line of scrimmage in the past, what are you seeing now that he's your quarterback? How are defenses, how do they react to this guy because they know what he's like at the line of scrimmage?
You know, sometimes the things that you do have nothing to do with who you're competing against. Your ability to disguise and time blitzes and things of that nature oftentimes depends on the collective experience of your group. And so I think generally that's where defensive architects start. And certainly Jim Schwartz has the players and the experience within his group to play that cat and mouse game with Aaron, with guys like Denzel Ward and Delpit back there and Newsom that have been back there for a long time. They have the collective experience to hold disguises, to get in and out of calls, and to do the things to match wits with a guy like Aaron. But I think first and foremost, it starts with yourselves. And that's why I mentioned the experience, the collective experience that they have.
Like with these division games coming up, obviously all three other teams lost this weekend. How do you feel about where you guys sit in the division right now?
I don't care what happened with other people, particularly last weekend. It's about us coming off the bye and getting ready for our game this week. I'm not a big picture guy.
Anyone else? All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Talk about timed blitzes. I think that Mike Tomlin waited for the perfect time, and he hammered Benzie on a blitz, didn't he there? Was that that was Benzie, wasn't it?
Oh, that was a safety blitz right off the edge. No one blocked him. No one blocked him.
That was Juan Thornhill for the greatest defense of all time, unblocked. Now let's go back to last year. Yes. Let's go back to last year. Because Benzie often comes off the top rope late in the news conference with the all-time example being at the final Tomlin news conference last year when Benzie, after Bert Lawton over there said, you know, any more questions, which is an indicator of we're basically done here. And Benzie wanted to know about the day that George Pickens decided to show up late for the Chiefs game.
Mike, is there any last accurate... one. Any accuracy to the report that Pickens was late on Christmas Day to the game against the Chiefs?
Man, that's a few days back. I really don't know. I have the answer to that, to be quite honest with you. I got a lot going on in pregame. I can't answer that definitively.
No, I don't remember if my most dynamic offensive player showed up for work on time.
We even mentioned in the press conference today as a dynamite receiver.
You're right. So all these months later, Benzie pipes up late with a question, a seemingly innocuous question, about Aaron Rodgers' recognition skills, and now it's Tomlin off the top rope. Do we have the question and the initial answer?
Here it is.
DK's had three really big home run after catch plays, two against New York and then the one in Ireland, and they're all three pretty astute moments of recognition from Aaron. We've like motioned somebody away, lots of space on the deep end, and he took it
81 yards for a touchdown. How much can Aaron highlight that for DK, kind of in the moment at the line of scrimmage when he sees something available for him?
Well, you're reaching there. You know, Aaron's an experienced quarterback, man. He makes good and timely decisions.
Yeah, you're reaching there.
That was tremendous. Wow, Mike. That was tremendous. And now I say that game is tied at one. So does Benzie come in loaded for Bear next weekend?
Or wow, next week? You think it was that big Tuesday? Of a shot from Mike?
No.
I still think Benzie has ultimately got him. But
it was subtle. But he definitely got a little Benzie payback there, I think. Don't you?
I agree. Yeah. Basically just brushed that question off as nothing. Like
you're
Aaron
reaching.
Just giving a little look over there to DK. No.
You're
not,
reaching
not that much
there.
To look into.
As far as the nuts and bolts of this thing, the important things, Alex Highsmith, Joey Porter Jr., the arrow pointed up. Same thing for Jaylen Warren, and he's keeping more than the light on, it sounds like. Says these guys might perk up later in the week, Calvin Austin and Jalen Ramsey, highly aggressive in their rehab. So we could get something close, finally, to a healthy Steeler roster. This game is tricky. This game is very, very tricky. The more I look at it and consider the Browns, I like them going to Dillon Gabriel. He's an interesting guy to me. And going against a masterminded defense, Brian Flores Vikings. Now, they've been a little bit banged up. They didn't play real well against the Steelers, so I'm considering that for sure. But still, this is a guy making his first career start. He goes 19-33 for a .190. Two touchdowns, no picks, a 94.3 rating, and they ran for 140 yards. That has my attention, oh limitless wonder. And I think if I was a betting man right now, I pick the Steelers to win the game, but the Browns to cover at 5.5. I think this is a fascinating little matchup here and a tricky little game for the Steelers coming off the bye week. And given that they have been afforded a huge opportunity now to take control of the AFC North. This is one they cannot squander.
And they have to make sure that they keep Dillon Gabriel upright so that Flacco does not come into the game.
No, he said he didn't go with that one.
No, he didn't drop
Although
that one in.
Anthony Richardson has taken another shot, I think, this week. I just think it's tricky. There were some other things with Tomlin that I want to get into. His thoughts on Roman Wilson.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I got to give Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan some credit for the depth on this team limits. I mean, it's easy to forget that game in Dublin. There was no Joey Porter. Ramsey leaves the game. There's no Highsmith. And overall, with some hiccups, there were some. They played a pretty destructive defensive game. And they seem to just have been collecting, you know, competent players in that secondary. It feels like there's 27 guys, some of whom just seem the same in that secondary. And there were problems against the Vikings. I'm not discounting that. But they also have Herbig as depth, and he's a starter now. I think that's one of the biggest developments of the early season is that Herbig is becoming a pass rush star.
Yeah, and I mean, he showed a lot of growth and potential to be that over the last couple of years, but this year is where he's really putting it together.
He really is, and I think that may eventually make Highsmith expendable, but in the meantime, depending on how creative they want to be, and they better be pretty creative because now you have guys to use, it's going to be fun to watch Herbig and Highsmith and Watt together, right?
Very, very, because TJ Watt, at times, and people were critical of it, comes off the field just to be able to preserve his snap counts and stay fresh and stuff like that. Now when you have Nick Herbig, you're losing somewhat of a beat, but it's not nearly as big of a drop-off as in years past to like the Taco Charltons of the world and the Anthony Chicolos
exactly.
of the world.
That's what I'm getting
guys.
At. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Defensively. Now, offensively, I'm not sure there is so much depth, although at the running back position, we saw Kenneth Gainwell come in and play really well. The reason I mention all of this is because of Tomlin's answer when he was asked about, you know, how do you play it with two divisional games in, what is it, 5 days or 4 days limit? So why can't I think of that?
You, because it's always
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 2 and 5.
Yeah, so you include the day.
Okay.
Do you include the day that you played the game, like Sunday?
Yes, I think you do when you say 2 and 5.
I agree with them.
And I think you have to plan ahead. I mean, especially when you have aging guys. Art Rooney referred last year to the Christmas tournament. Didn't the wear down start? Now, that was 3 games in like 11, 12 days.
Yeah, 11 days.
Against 3 really good teams. I get it. But the point is that when you have games bunched up together like this, you better be planning ahead, right? I mean, the Thursday night games, I shudder when I think of Cam Hayward going out and playing, you know what's to the wall in a Sunday game and then coming right back on Thursday. You have to plan ahead. I'm going to assume that Tomlin just didn't want to even hint at any bulletin board material for the Browns when he said, I'm just focused on this game. But they have to be planning ahead and spreading out snaps. Would you agree with that?
I would.
Defensively, where there's age. And he mentioned a guy like Jalen Ramsey could be, he could perk up, I think was the phrase he used, and play this week. Is that even smart? Or if you play Ramsey in this game, do you have to watch his snap count? Do you have to maybe play him this game and then really watch it against Cincinnati? These are all things that need to be thought about and planned out. You know what I mean?
Well, the same can be said for Jaylen Warren and Calvin Austin, because you have that mini bye after the Cincinnati game. Is it worth pushing those guys this early in the season in the position that you're in for them to potentially re-aggravate injuries?
I want to see them make great use of their depth in this game. They got 2 games to win in 5 days, and you can't lose games you should win this season. They have to put an end to that. Zach Wilson or his like can't walk in here and execute 2 long touchdown drives in the Steelers' home building. They can't lose at home to a Bailey Zappi. They can't go on the road and lose to Jake Browning as they have to Jameis Winston and DTR. Is that his name from a couple of years ago?
Dorian Thompson Robinson.
That crap has to end. It got to be done with that. You got 2 games in 5 days. I say the tougher game, by the way, is Cleveland. You need to win both, period. And I don't really care how you do it. I think I'm going to lighten up a little on the style points for these 2 games, especially Thursday at Cincy, and just look at the record afterward when they have a nice long break before their next game. You have to go 2-0 here. There can't be any of these ridiculous, damaging letdowns that there have been in recent years. There can't be.
So you're going to play Warren, Austin, and Ramsey if they can go? If they're like 80, 85%?
That's a good question.
You're going to play them?
I don't think so. I think that's because I still want to preserve them. I'm not treating this like a playoff game. Remember, I want to win both. So if you're telling me Ramsey will be 80%, but another 3-4 days to get ready for Cincy, he'll definitely be ready for that one. To me, that's not really abdicating on this game. That's trying to give my team the best chance to win both. You know what I mean?
I agree with that. Same thing with Calvin Austin.
I want Hayward snap spread out. I want Watts snap spread out. There's no reason not to. Highsmith, you have to be very careful with, but if he's ready to go, great. Then spread everybody's snaps out. You have to win both of these games. No excuse. What are they? 5.5 points, right?
5.5 points favorites against the Browns, yes.
Yeah.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.